This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Welcome to our podcast, The Screwtape Letters, Confronting Evil in Our Time. I'm Ian Faith.
And I'm Galen Belinsky. In each episode, we will unpack one of C.S. Lewis's 31 letters and illuminate the nefarious schemes that the devil and his minions play in our world today.
Understanding how the demonic forces seek to separate us from God helps us to expose them,
reject them, and pursue Jesus as the center of our lives.
Subscribe and join us and our guests on this journey, The Screwtape Letters.
My dear Wormwood, you seem to be doing very little good at present. The use of his love to distract his mind from the enemy is, of course, obvious, but you reveal what poor use you are making of it when you say that the whole question of distraction and the wandering mind has now become one of the chief subjects of his prayers. That means you have largely failed. When this or any other distraction crosses his mind, you ought to encourage him to thrust it away by sheer willpower and to try to continue the normal prayer as if nothing had happened. Once he accepts the distraction as his present problem and lays that before the enemy and makes it the main theme of his prayers and his endeavors, then, so far from doing good, you have done harm. Anything, even a sin, which has the total effect of moving him close up to the enemy, makes against us in the long run. A promising line is the following. Now that he is in love, a new idea of earthly happiness has arisen in his mind, and hence a new urgency in his purely petitionary prayers about this war and other such matters. Now is the time for raising intellectual difficulties about prayer of that sort. False spirituality is always to be encouraged on the seemingly pious ground that praise and communion with God are the true prayer. Humans can often be lured into direct disobedience to the enemy, who, in his usual flat, commonplace, uninteresting way, has definitely told them to pray for their daily bread and the recovery of their sick. You will, of course, conceal from him the fact that the prayer for daily bread, interpreted in a spiritual sense, is really just as crudely petitionary as it is in any other sense. But since your patient has contracted the terrible habit of obedience, he will probably continue such crude prayers, whatever you do. But you can worry him with the haunting suspicion that the practice is absurd and can have no objective result. Don't forget to use the heads I win, tails you lose argument. If the thing he prays for doesn't happen, then that is one more proof that petitionary prayers don't work. If it does happen, he will, of course, be able to see some of the physical causes which led up to it, and therefore it would have happened anyway. And thus, a granted prayer becomes just as good a proof as a denied one that prayers are ineffective. You, being a spirit, will find it difficult to understand how he gets into this confusion, but you must remember that he takes time for an ultimate reality. He supposes that the enemy, like himself, sees some things as present, remembers others as past, and anticipates others as future. Or even if he believes the enemy does not see things that way, yet, in his heart of hearts, he regards this as a peculiarity of the enemy's mode of perception. He doesn't really think, though he would say he did, that things as the enemy sees them are things as they are. If you try to explain to him that men's prayers today are one of the innumerable coordinates with which the enemy harmonizes the weather of tomorrow, he would reply that then the enemy always knew men were going to make those prayers, and if so, they did not pray freely, but were predestined to do so. And he would add that the weather on a given day can be traced back through its causes to the original creation of matter itself, so that the whole thing, both on the human and on the material side, is given from the word go. What he ought to say, of course, is obvious to us, that the problem of adapting the particular weather to the particular prayers is merely the appearance at two points in his temporal mode of perception of the total problem of adapting the whole spiritual universe to the whole corporeal universe. That creation in its entirety operates at every point of space and time, or rather, that their kind of consciousness forces them to encounter the whole self-consistent creative act as a series of successive events. Why that creative act leaves room for their free will is the problem of problems, the secret behind the enemy's nonsense about love. How it does so is no problem at all. The enemy does not foresee the humans making their free contributions in a future, but sees them doing so in his unbounded now. Obviously, to watch a man doing something is not to make him do it. It may be replied that some meddlesome human writers, notably Boethius, have let this secret out. But in the intellectual climate that we have at last succeeded in producing throughout Western Europe, you needn't bother about that. Only the learned read old books, and we have now so dealt with the learned that they are, of all men, the least likely to acquire wisdom by doing so. We have done this by inculcating the historical point of view. The historical point of view, put briefly, means that when a learned man is presented with any statement in an ancient author, the one question he never asks is whether it is true. He asks who influenced the ancient writer and how far the statement is consistent with what he said in other books and what phase in the writer's development or in the general history of thought it illustrates and how it affected later writers and how it has been misunderstood, especially by the learned man's own colleagues, and what the general course of criticism on it has been for the last 10 years and what is the present state of the question. To regard the ancient writer as a possible source of knowledge, to anticipate that what he said could possibly modify your thoughts or your behaviour, this would be rejected as unutterably simple-minded. And since we cannot deceive the whole human race all the time, it is most important thus to cut every generation off from all others. For where learning makes a free commerce between the ages, there is always the danger that the characteristic errors of one may be corrected by the characteristic truths of another. But thanks be to our father and the historical point of view, great scholars are now as little nourished by the past as the most ignorant mechanic who holds that history is bunk. Your affectionate uncle, Screwtape.
Welcome back to the Screwtape Letters podcast, Confronting Evil in Our Time. We hope you're having a blessed day, and we hope that these letters that we're unpacking are actually making a change in your life. I know for me, I go back through some of these and listen to them again, and there's the amount that pours out, not just within what C.S. Lewis wrote, but also within when Galen and I unpack them, and it just makes me rethink things in life. And this topic today in letter 27 is pretty fantastic because it's talking about the power of prayer, the power of communing with God and being persistent in prayer. It's something that from very early on in my life, I've always been a huge believer in, that you don't just pray once for something, you pray specifically and you pray constantly. And I've always been amazed with the amount of times and how blessed I am that God's answered so many of my prayers. So yeah, let's dig in. Galen, how's life in Pennsylvania, and are we ready for letter 27?
Yeah, well, thanks for checking in. Life is good. We're moving along out here. Starting to get chilly as Thanksgiving is fast approaching, but all is well. And kind of interesting, we talk about this chapter because I'll share like a quick testimony that ties in exactly with what's going on in this chapter regarding prayer. You know, we've been We just launched our business this past weekend, big brand opening. And you and I were sharing before this episode that, you know, we were talking a month, six weeks ago. I was really asking you for prayer because I needed to get some licensing done and still needed to get over some big red tape hurdles in order to open the business. And I had been praying, my friend group had been praying, and you had been praying for me. And then quite frankly, after this past weekend, it was a really, really great weekend. All the licensing, everything came together, maybe a little bit later than I thought, but it went really, really well. Business was launched really well. And I even the other night, I was tempted to think, what was I so worried about? It was always going to work out all along. And I actually rebuked myself and said, well, let's, you know, I saw something written up on the, we write dry erase markers on the windows, you know, praying for these licenses. And that was a prayer that was answered. And I'm so tempted in my flesh to think, well, it was probably going to happen that way all along, right. But not necessarily. And that's exactly what's happening here. He talks starting about the subject of love and the fact that his love interest is pulling away from God. And he's bringing that to the Lord in prayer. And he's talking about how it's good to do that, but the best tactic to pull a man's mind away from prayer is to make him think it's a petty, trite, little cute thing to do that really doesn't have any consequence on reality.
Right, exactly. I think if listeners had an inside look at my life and your life over the last year, the things we put before God that, Lord, please provide this for us, or please help me find a plan and your plan for my future, to see where we've got to and to experience the inner workings, they would be probably thinking these are the two of the luckiest guys on earth. And I feel like that, right?
Right.
Some people say, you know, as a Christian, you should be, instead of not, oh, everything's great, you should actually throw out there everything that you're struggling with. And obviously we all struggle with things, but life's great. And
right.
This podcast, one of those things, my marriage, my children, my country, everything is turning in the right direction. And I'm just amazed to see through continued prayer where this will go. So let's dig in. The patient is becoming aware of being distracted in praying for the things that he wants, and also asking himself, why am I being distracted? And is some of the force distracting me in this? And this is a great question for everyone, right? Because the doubt that can actually be implicated in your prayer life can cause you to stop praying.
Oh, totally. Totally. Well, I think it's also really good to point out that the subject is actually demonstrating a really good habit. He does have something in his life, something good. And again, you talk about good things. Sometimes good things, when things are going well, it pulls us away from God. I remember there's that proverb that says, Lord, don't let me be so poor that I'm tempted to steal and do evil to get what I need and defame your name. And don't let me be so wealthy and things going so well that I say, who even is the Lord? I forget about him.
Correct.
That's what's going on here, because he's in a good romantic relationship, but he recognizes it and he brings it to God and says, Lord, I'm even distracted. I feel like I'm being pulled away from you. Help me with this. And Wormwood thinks that's a victory because he feels tempted. And Screwtape is pointing out, no, you idiot.
Yeah. <It's> like,
the fact that he's bringing it to the Lord is precisely what we don't want him to do. And he starts throwing out all these other strategies to pull him away from bringing anything to God in prayer.
So for all our Christians out there who do engage in reading the Bible on a regular basis, challenge yourself to this. Try and find five persistence in prayer quotes. And you can look them all up on the internet if you're not even going to leaf through your Bible. There's not just five, there's tons of them. It's virtually throughout both the Old and New Testament. It's in all the Gospels. The idea of persistence in prayer is something that you need to engage in. It isn't I prayed once and nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
God wants that communion with you. I think part of me also sees it along the lines of about sincerity within that prayer, that if you're persistent within it, it's something you want. I actually write down, I've got sticky notes on my computers with different prayers for myself, because I think unless I actually write them down and actually put them out there to the Lord, I don't know if he's going to look at my heart and say, Ian, is that really what you want? And is that really the right thing for you? And I think within that prayer life as well, people will say, well, it never happened. Maybe it wasn't right for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you can also, like you said earlier, don't let me steal. Don't let me, you know, do evil. You may have to look within some of the things that you're wanting. Is what you want going to be to the material detriment of somebody else?
Right.
Now, someone could say... Go for it.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you're dealing with God and he's, you know, moving things around in reality, he's quite aware of all of the butterfly effect of how that could impact a number of other things, other people and yourself included. But I think engaging in the process of prayer and bringing things to him, that's when things get worked out. And it's often said that, you know, sometimes prayer doesn't necessarily change how God acts or how God wills, but sometimes it's conforming our heart and our will to his. And sometimes, you know, maybe it's praying for something that you think you want or need and then resolving that you don't, or praying about it and getting a revelation of how it's going to happen. I want to read a pretty crucial line in here on the second page of the letter. And Screwtape is kind of complaining about the fact that this guy's engaging in all these prayers. He says, but since your patient has contracted the terrible habit of obedience, he will probably continue such crude prayers no matter whatever you do. In other words, engaging in the discipline of prayer, because it's communion with your Father, not just because you can see the correlation between cause and effect and see things being answered or not answered, continuing in obedience is the thing that brings about God's will and the answer to that prayer one way or another.
Correct. Yeah. And also, you think about it along the lines of, you know, sports, where people will say, you know, does God really want one team to win over the other? Because the team who won, thank God for the victory. I think they're not just thanking God for the victory, but for the effort that they put in, you know, in there as well. But mm-hmm. at the same time, that muscle that you build of praying constantly, also, there's studies out there that show it actually reduces anxiety. It makes you a more calm person, a more focused person when you pray, because you now have a real focus on the things you want in life and a perspective of where your life is. As you pray, it sort of opens your eyes to all of the ancillary effects that what you are praying for is going to have, not just on your own life, but on the lives of people around you as well.
Right.
Yeah, so it's powerful. So, you know, the question...
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more, and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
That they're talking about in here is we have to fuddle humans with the idea of, does prayer work? And he uses that old adage, heads I win, tails you lose, which I thought was a very new adage, but obviously
new,
it's something
right, new clip. Dates,
yeah, I think obviously dates back at least 100 years, right? If he's writing this in the late 30s, that this is probably something that's that old. And you know, what a great way to put it, because they're saying if prayers don't equal results, then prayers must be futile. And if it does, then maybe they would have happened anyway. And that's the devil's way of making you realize that, yeah, prayer's futile. I've got some amazing stories in my life of praying for people who were sick. I'm a huge believer that you can heal in the name of Jesus Christ, especially when two or more gather, like it says in Matthew, in prayer. And we had a gentleman who was intubated during COVID. He was pulled off his supports on the Friday, and they called his family and said there's nothing more they can do. He had multiple comorbidities. By Sunday, he was sitting up eating in bed. And we gathered when we heard as a prayer group with maybe 30 people, and we came back the Friday night, the Saturday night, and the Sunday night, and we kept praying. And within 2 weeks, he was released from the hospital. From the point of gather the family, there's nothing more we can do, to he's home. People could have said, yeah, but he was going to, like, that's, you can't say that. He was just going to get well anyway. The doctors just misdiagnosed it.
Oh, man. How easy is it for your mind to do that? And that's where it's like that. Sometimes our faith is a lot weaker than we realize. It's so easy to think we have big faith. But when it comes to things like that, so quickly our mind will just turn to the natural, because it's what we can see. It's what we feel like we can explain away. But don't neglect to realize, like, God was orchestrating all of these things. And he used that prayer group to bring about a healing in that man's life. Did God know you guys were going to pray, and he planned it all along? If you guys hadn't prayed, would he not gotten well? And it's kind of the next section in the letter. He talks about the fact that we live in time and God lives outside of time.
Correct.
You know, and this is going to get into, like, big philosophical, like, probably too deep into the pool for us to get into in this episode. Maybe some of our listeners can chime in, shout out some good resources for trying to walk that line of free will and determinism, you know. But I think I want to point out one line that Screwtape mentions, talking about the fact that, you know, do our prayers change the weather? Because surely the weather is just a sequence of events that happened from the dawn of creation, you know. So it's like, how does that work? Obviously, God set everything in motion, but he says that tension between, like, determinism and free will is why that creative act leaves room for their free will. Or the fact that that creative act leaves room for their free will is the problem of problems, the secret behind the enemy's nonsense about love. And even the demonic looks at it as a little bit of a secret. They don't fully understand how God is fully sovereign, but still uses the free will of man in prayer, especially, to direct the sequence of events in life.
So I want to jump back to this gentleman we were praying for, because here's where the magic, I don't like using the word magic, because God's not magic.
You say mystery. Yeah.
The mystery. That's okay. The mystery. Yeah. But it's the majesty. It's more the majesty.
There you go. That great word. Yeah. Yeah.
Because what it gathered was people of all political stripes. It gathered people who were highly religious and some people who were non-religious. We went to a park where we were publicly visible. People bought candles. We held hands and we prayed together, and it wasn't quick. You know, we probably spent at minimum half an hour there praying different ways, different people. We went around the circle asking people to pray. People prayed who hadn't prayed before in a setting like that. And then you think about it along this lines, right? The science people would say, well, look, he was probably just going to get better anyway. But hang on a second, science, the doctors were science, and they said he wasn't going to get better.
So we've got science on record here.
Defied science, you know? Oh, but doctors aren't right all the time. Okay, then what science? Because if it's not empirical, but what is I don't care about the empirical side of it, because we got our prayers answered. The family got their prayers answered. And a man was brought back to life. to me, there's like, and I've had people, so let me finish. To me, it was absolutely a majestic moment of God's grace and his healing. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of people who even point to this day when I speak to them, that they say, I still can't believe what happened to him. It's that was just something else, because people were dying like flies. And if, as I say, if you look at this gentleman's profile, too many comorbidities, too many situations where you're like, okay, with what's going on, he's a goner.
Right.
It's insane. Yeah. So that idea that it could be heads I win, tails you lose, I'll dispute that till the day I die, because I've not just seen it in that situation, but I've seen it in others where I've had other people we've been heavily praying for, and I mean heavily and very, very distinctly and very specifically. I always tell people, don't just pray vaguely. I think you've got to be very specific in what you're asking God for. And especially when it comes to healing, you name their name, because God named us. God knows their name. And it also shows, I think, when you're very specific with it, a very deeper connection between you and God of what that prayer is that you actually want answered.
The other thing, you know, this has been a big thing in my life, just an area of growth, something that I've grown in and I'm learning more about, but really learning to just walk in authority that God has placed us on earth. We have access to the throne. You know, we approach the throne of God boldly because of Jesus Christ, and he has placed us as his vice regents on this place, especially Christians. We're to be the kings of the land, and to just be willing to walk in that authority and ask for big things in faith. I was talking to someone the other day. One of the biggest cop outs in Christianity is using the term, if it's your will. And it's like praying, oh, Lord, heal this person, if it's your will. And it's like, how often have I said that? And it's really just fear that God can't or won't. And I'm trying to give God a cop out when I ask for
That's brilliant.
A prayer for healing or a prayer for whatever it is. And I'm saying it as a guy who comes from a little bit more of a cessationist past, definitely don't live there anymore. I've kind of rebuked myself. You know, we do want thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And Jesus prayed, Lord, if it's your will, you know, take this cup from me. But to constantly use that as a cop out, it's a seed of doubt entering in your prayer a lot of times. And that would just throw that out.
Thank you.
Yeah, throw that out as a challenge to the listeners to think. Have you ever prayed that? You know, Lord, if it's your will, I'm just giving God a cop out because I'm afraid he won't do it. You know.
See, and this is the beauty of this, of what we're unpacking with these podcasts, is there's revelatory things that will change the way your prayer life works and your Christian life will work. Lastly, when we look at this letter, he points to very educated or learned people. And it makes me think about how the way Simon Peter's portrayed within the Bible, he's not that smart a guy. Right. And you then look at, you know, Luke was a doctor, and there's other people that were all different levels of education or wisdom within their worlds. And C.S. Lewis points out within the Screwtape Letters that some people who are so learned are incapable of acquiring wisdom. And I think we see that in our society today. That too much education, I hate to use this term, but can make you stupid. Because I think wisdom makes you wise, and facts in and of themselves don't make you wise and can actually make you stupid. And I'll use it
100%.
And I'll use it in, again, back to the story. The doctor said he was going to die. Why isn't he dead? I'm so smart that I know medicine. Why isn't he dead? Because you don't have wisdom. Because a wise man would say that there are external forces and there are other influences on the world, because the watchmaker story, we didn't just find the watch on the beach, the sand bashed it together, and all of a sudden you got a Timex. Something put this world into creation and has to be explained. And for us Christians, it was God that did it. and he sent his son Jesus Christ, which is the continuation of his engagement and his love for us here on earth. So it's a challenge to everyone who's very highly educated, who's walking in faith, to say, maybe let your guard down a little and actually have some of that faith, that belief that there could be things happening outside of what science or what normal forces say should happen.
Spot on. You get people that have more degrees than Fahrenheit seeking knowledge and facts, but not wisdom. And you can have as much empirical evidence and data as possible, but if you don't have really Jesus, who is the foundation of all knowledge, and the Holy Spirit, who is the discerner of things in this age, you're just going to have a knowledge that puffs up, and that can so easily become a blind spot. And it's not that we're not dismissing, the scientific community or doctors. We have a great appreciation for them, but that knowledge puffs up, and it can create, knowing so much can enable, or seeing so much broadly in the scientific realm, can blind you from some things that are happening right in front of your eyes. I think we see it a lot. I want to point out one other thing too, because there's another famous phrase that I'm 90% sure comes from C.S. Lewis. If any of our listeners want to confirm this, write and see if I'm correct. He uses a phrase in another one of his writings called, he says, chronological snobbery. And what he means by that is there's this haughty attitude among the smart people of today to look at the so-called smart people of yesteryear and go, oh, they were so silly. Look at what they believed. And, they believed the stars, and all this mysticism. And it's because they didn't understand science. They thought things were magic or whatever it is. This, they didn't know what we know today. And because we're alive today and we have more knowledge than them, we become snobs about it. And I think this is kind of a hint of that. I think this is something that he would have been thinking here, because when we look at something of somebody else says, if they don't have the credentials that we have, or if they don't have, the citations we have from this media source, or they're not published in this journal, we ask all these other ancillary questions, but don't ever ask the question, is it true?
Right.
And I think that's super powerful. And I see this a lot, even in the world today. Might be getting a little long-winded here, but even I see a lot of people that might not have great credentials in things like the media being able to call a lie out right in front of their eyes, and someone would discount them and say, oh, that person's just ridiculous. They're just a conspiracy theorist. Well, you're going to discount everything they say, but you're not going to stop and ask, is the claim they're making true?
Correct.
So many things get in the way of allowing us to discern reality. And it also impacts the way we approach God in prayer.
So. Hey, and Galen, we have to note that anytime we have a quiz on attributing quotes to C.S. Lewis, if it's a competition, William O'Flaherty, our friend, is not
right.
A mentor.
Because he has the answers.
He's just brilliant. If anyone hasn't listened to him, you've got to listen to him online. And with that whole idea of asking whether it's true, it's so funny because people will then ask all these other questions, like C.S. Lewis points out, with, oh, well, who said it? Well, who were their influences? Where did they go to college? What was going on at the time? And it's almost like all of those are to destroy or degrade the truth that's sitting there right in front of you.
I think we see that spirit alive today.
Yeah, be 100%. Be aware of it. I think what you said is really amazing, and we'll wrap this letter, which is sometimes the truth hits you in the face, and others around you will be like, that can't be true. You know it's true. There's certain truths that it's almost like as those words come out of your mouth, you shake and it's true, even though you don't want to believe it. And it can be from micro things with things that happen within your family or within your friends to big, social situations. And obviously, I think over the last, 8 years, we've all been gaslit by things that empirically you knew weren't true. And you, the media is telling you that they are true, and you're like, no, they're not true. And then on the adverse, things that are true that they're telling you are not true. And so, yeah, you have to use that communication with the Holy to really discern those things. So this is a brilliant letter.
It really is.
For our listeners, on November 29th, the day after Thanksgiving, we'll be on a podcast, Pints with Jack. For all C.S. Lewis fans, it's C.S. Lewis reading day that day. So we'd encourage everyone to share the Screwtape Letters podcast with some friends, share C.S. Lewis's Screwtape Letters with friends. It's a big day for everyone to give a little bit of a thank you to C.S. Lewis for his writings, for God inspiring him, which I truly believe his writings were inspired. And so that's the day after Thanksgiving. We'll be on that podcast listening for that. Check in with our website. Check in with Galen's Homecoming Winery as well. You'll see a link on the ScrewtapeLettersPodcast.com site. When I talk about change in a year, to see when Galen first told me about this to where he is now, anyone would think it took a lifetime, but this just shows that, I think, Galen, the power of God working in your life. And congratulations to you, the Homecoming Winery, homecomingwinery.com. It's just amazing. So you are blessed, my friend.
Thank you. That is a fact.
So until next time, ScrewtapeLettersPodcast.com, confronting evil in our time, and we'll see you again.